Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, 800-531-3815, toll-free coast to coast. And Joan Pride is our guest, and she's a lady who was, in fact, born in the USA, and she's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and our good friend joins us every week at this time to talk about what Kiplinger has to say in their Kiplinger letter about what's going on in the world. Joan, welcome back.
Good morning, Jim.
Good to have you back. And by the way, the next time you're on the show after this, because you're not going to be here next week.
Yes.
The next time you're going to be on the show is going to be...
I will not be awake.
You won't be awake the next time you're on the show?
No. Oh. I will be there, but not
awake. That's right. It'll be early. We'll have to get you some intravenous coffee or something. Because a week from this Monday, I'm going to be broadcasting from your offices, God willing, God in equipment willing, God in technology willing. I'm going to be broadcasting from your offices, helping Kiplinger celebrate their 80th anniversary.
You mean this is going to be in person?
Yeah, face-to-face.
Well, then maybe I won't need coffee.
That's right. My face will wake anybody up. That's right. Stop a clock, whatever. But anyway, we're going to be doing the show from your offices on Monday the 15th. I'm going to be talking to you. I'm going to be talking to Knight Kiplinger, who's the editor-in-chief of Kiplinger now, the grandson of the founder, and the son of the founder, who's also turning 85 that week.
Which is very exciting.
Mr. Austin Kiplinger, who's been on this show a couple of three times before, is going to be with us. And let me tell you something, folks. He is a treasure. He's a national treasure, in my opinion, Joan.
He's also amazing.
He is, isn't he?
Because he is very involved, comes to work every day.
85, ramrod straight.
He is the most vigorous 85-year-old person I've ever seen.
Could step right into the cover of GQ, couldn't he?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Dapper guy, just a wealth of excellent memories and information.
And the nicest man.
A very nice human being. So I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun. The whole week I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. You've alerted the authorities for me, right, Joan?
Well, they're adding police presence as we speak.
Yeah, I'm sure they will, and I'm looking forward to
the mob.
I'm looking forward to the Kiplinger limousine meeting me at the airport too, Joan.
You go ahead and look forward all you want.
It'll be here any minute, I'm sure.
As soon as I find it.
Joan, let's talk about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world today. And the first thing up out of the box is what Congress is up to. And they've got three things on their mind right now, don't they?
Well, it's sort of funny because when they left on vacation, they only had two things on their mind. But while they were away, there was this little blackout that occurred. So they've got a third thing on their agenda.
Right.
And the three things are, number one, energy. And, of course, I'm referring back to the blackout that occurred in several states on August 14th. Then, of course, they have to finish the federal spending bills, all the appropriations bills, and then they have Medicare issues that they have to deal with, specifically prescription drug coverage for senior citizens.
You know, I could just see these guys back home when that happened, when the blackout happened. And gals.
Okay, that's fine,
but you know what I mean. And so I wasn't being chauvinistic. I was including them in my guys.
I know you didn't mean to be chauvinistic, sure.
But anyway, these folks... who are in Congress.
That's good.
I can just see them when the blackout happened thinking, oh, God, there's something else we got to deal with when I get back.
Right.
Well, what's going to happen? Are they going to pass an energy bill?
Well, we think so, but it's not going to be, you know, the big, huge be-all and end-all that you might expect after this blackout that occurred. I mean, they already had an energy bill pending in Congress.
They had one working, didn't they?
Yes, they sure did. So it's not. Don't give them credit for suddenly conjuring something up when they get back.
Well, and that's actually kind of good news because you and I both know how dangerous it can be when Congress tries to bake up a cake in a couple of days.
Right, and they've done that in the past.
They did it with the Sarbanes-Oxley bill.
Right.
And look what I mean. The jury's still out on that deal. But
true.
But anyway, it's going to be interesting. But now a lot of people. One of the things that's come out of this blackout issue, Joan, is the concept of a grid, a national grid. And Kiplinger says that we're not going to get one of those.
No, and because right now I think what we have are regional grids.
Right.
Which is sort of a problem. If we had a national grid, things might be spread out a little better. But that's a pretty big change, I would think.
But if we had a national grid, we might have had 292 million people without power instead of 50 million.
Can you imagine? Wow.
Just think about that.
No, so, I don't want to.
Yeah, I certainly don't know.
Well,
what
I think the idea is that currently you may or may not. I'm not trying to impugn anybody's abilities here, but you may have different levels of abilities and watchfulness over the different regions of the country. Whereas theoretically, if you have a national grid, you don't have a patchwork quilt. You have one centralized location that's
right.
watching everything.
Well, and a national grid could make sense from the standpoint of if something had happened. I mean, if we had been hooked up nationally and the power went out in Ohio that triggered a bunch of the other things that happened, that maybe some power from Indiana and Iowa could be shot over there and could sort of take up the slack a little bit.
Right, right. The thing that I don't understand about all this is I understand why the power went out in Ohio, but I think people are still scratching their heads over how it could have spread to these different states so quickly.
They need to install the firewall concept, don't they?
Where I think they thought they had.
Well, we can get things out, but nothing can get in. For example,
right.
you know, we can send the power from Iowa to Ohio, but the blackout from Ohio can't get to Iowa.
And I think under the current system, you could not have done this idea of the power from Ohio from Iowa.
Uh-huh.
Going over, I think.
Yeah.
But
well,
you just exhausted my extent of the knowledge of
so we need to move on. Is that what you're saying?
Oh.
What also, that you guys also point out that conservation and exploration are going to get a boost from all this.
Well, all these things go hand in hand, trying to conserve power, but also trying to find new power to sort of boost up our supply.
Well, Joan, I'm not so much concerned about the electrical thing because I said this before, that... I said, if you remember, I said before we knew anything that we were going to find out that it was some little silly little glitch somewhere that anybody could, we could have a national grid extraordinaire and still have one little bitty weak link that could trip up something, and that's almost what happened,
right?
I think. And so I'm not so much concerned about the electricity as much as I am our dependence upon foreign oil. And as you know, as we've reported on the show, our dependence on foreign petroleum is greater today than it was 20 years ago, and it's not going to get better. It's getting worse.
Right. You know, we're buying up SUVs and fancy cars and trucks, and
so that's what's wrong.
Well, that's part of it.
Well, part of it is also that we're growing at 3 million people a year.
Well, that too. But I mean, if you look at how much gasoline we're using compared to the more conservative years before SUVs, it's a big
right.
difference.
Right. So, Joan, does that mean you're going to have to turn your excursion in? Is that what that means?
Oh, please don't make me do that.
Stand by, folks. It's 20 after. We'll be right back with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, who is about to celebrate their 80th birthday. Not Joan. She's only 75. 20 after. Stay with us. Back, it's 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest, and she is, in fact, an American woman, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and our good friend. Joan, the second thing that Congress is working on are spending bills. Now, here's what amazes me, and I see this in state houses as well. Why do they wait till the last minute to do the thing that's the most... See, we didn't ask them to go to Washington to pass some bill that adds a regulation to us. We did ask them to go to Washington and manage the finances of the country. Why can't they do that first? And then if they've got any time left over, then they can go mucking around in our lives. What's wrong with that idea?
Well, Jim, when you were in college, I guarantee that either you or someone you knew or people you knew would wait till the very last minute to write their term paper.
Joan, you stopped preaching and started meddling now.
That's what these guys... too, and
but when we were in college, we had beer and toga
well,
parties. We had other things to do. These guys aren't supposed to have that. They're supposed to be serious adults.
Jim, you're not getting naive on me.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
And this is amazing to me. As we say in here, none of the there's 13 spending bills that have to be passed every year for the various departments. You know, defense, state, housing and urban development. Even Congress, all these different areas have to be passed. And not one of the spending bills for the next fiscal year, which begins in less than a month, has been enacted, which is, I think, their worst record in a long time. Usually by now, at the very least, you've got a couple done.
Yeah, well, I've seen it this bad before. I mean, you and I have seen it where, in fact, we've reported almost every year where with 2 weeks to go, they had, you know, maybe almost nothing done.
Yeah, but usually there's at least one or two to have nothing done. It's sort of interesting to me. I think they've gone through the year assuming that they're going to wrap this into one big bill that they call the continuing resolution.
Well, what surprises me is that this is happening, and it's not even an election year. Usually this happens during an election year because one party is whoever's in the White House, the other party is trying to demonstrate that the president is not doing his job.
Yeah, but then, Jim, doesn't that speak to the level of partisanship we're seeing in Congress now? Because this is how
incredible.
Bad it's gotten.
I would blame both sides
for that.
I agree 100%. We need fewer politicians and more leaders in Washington,
leaders.
D.C.
Well, what's that?
And I don't know where we're going to get those people, but unless you and I decide to run for Congress, Joan, I don't know how.
Well, like I told you, Mary J. Blige, Britney Spears, and Aretha Franklin are singing on the Mall tonight to start the NFL season.
What has the world come to? And as I'll remind you, only two of those ladies are singing. Britney Spears cannot sing, so she'll be attending but won't be singing. Even if she's opening her mouth and sound is coming out, it won't be singing. Number three, Joan, the Medicare prescription drug deal.
Yes. Now, we thought this was greased before they went home, and things are beginning to slip a little bit now.
Is that greased or greased?
Both, maybe.
I think it's greased, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. Things are not looking good right now, I can say that.
Well, the president wants this badly, doesn't he?
Well, he does, and he thinks it's an important election issue, and I think he's right about that. But you have conservatives coming in here who are saying, and they have a point to make as well, that don't expand Medicare and give this whole new benefit without doing something about the basic system, which is kind of run amok.
Mm-hmm. Well, the truth is it's needed, and the other truth is it's too expensive, isn't it?
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's not too expensive, but it's just expensive at a bad time. What's it, about 50 million?
Million?
I mean billion. 50 billion?
Yeah, I think
it's about 50 billion a year, isn't that a year?
And you're absolutely right. It's totally needed, but the basic system that underlies it, the Medicare system, needs a lot of reform, which, you know, Medicare and Social Security are known as the third rail of politics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you touch them and you die.
Right. Absolutely. And there are examples of the truth of what's happening with, or I should say, what when we send our elected representatives to Congress, even state houses are like this, Joan. Only, what is it, about 15 or 20% of what would they take in, can they even have any control over? Everything else is pretty much already established.
What is
the number federal?
In terms of spending?
Yeah, in other words...
If you look at the pie of federal spending, you would look at... We talk about, well, we have to cut spending. We have to cut domestic spending. Well, that's only a sliver of the pie.
Right.
The big, big part of the pie, and even defense spending isn't a big part of the pie. It's Social Security, Medicare, and interest on the federal debt.
Yeah. It's like what? It's somewhere in the 80% range, isn't it?
I was going to say it's more than three-quarters of the pie.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so all the other things that Congress does is just mucking around, counting pennies here and there with 20 or so percent.
Right.
Yeah. So here's the deal. You guys say that the odds of passage is slipping for the Medicare prescription drug benefit.
That's right. But we believe Bush will fight hard to save it.
Yeah.
Because he thinks it is so important, and like I said, I think he's absolutely right about that.
Well, and doesn't this seem like an ironic situation that a Republican president is pushing for this, and he may not be able to get it through, and how much of that is because of the Democrats?
Well, it's hard to know, but I think conservatives are giving him a rough time on this. Like
yeah.
I said, they're the ones who are pushing. I agree with you that the Democrats have problems with it, but Republicans have problems too in terms of the lack of overall reform that's been included in this bill that they want.
The Republicans don't want it because it's kind of a liberal issue. The Democrats don't want it right now because they don't want to let President Bush get credit for it.
Well, and for other reasons as well.
Yeah, exactly. All right, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. This is ZZ Top. They'll take us out. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 After. Thank you very much for hanging around with us today. 800-531-3815, toll free coast to coast. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get to my website, which is jbsba.com, www.jbsba.com, or smallbusinessadvocate.com, or jimblassingame.com. Either one of those, whatever you prefer to type in or whatever you can remember. Maybe that's the best way to do it. And just check it out when you get a chance. And my newsletter comes every week by email on Sunday, and you can join the ranks of over 10,000 subscribers now to our letter. So thank you very much for those of you who've been signing up in droves lately. Joan Pride is our guest, and they produce an outstanding document themselves, ladies and gentlemen, the Kiplinger Letter, which comes out once a week by print and by electronic. I get it both ways. I can't get enough of it. And it's now in its 80th year. Think about that, folks. A small business, which Kiplinger is, right, Joan?
That's right. And we're also not just the 80th year, but the third generation of ownership, too.
Exactly. That's incredible.
Which is very important.
Yeah, very important. Mr. Willard Kiplinger founded it, passed it on to his son, Austin, who's now the patriarch and about to celebrate his 85th birthday, as we mentioned. And then Knight Kiplinger, who's the new editor-in-chief, who is the grandson of the founder. And in addition to the weekly letter, which is 80 years old this month, they also have three biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter, and all of those are available at Kiplinger.com, and as well as the magazine, the Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, and we need a phone number too, Joan.
That's right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
So check that out. It's an outstanding publication, whichever one you choose. And I think there's still a 30-day free trial, isn't there,
Joan? The Blassingame free trial, yes.
Exactly. So check that out when you get a chance. Joan, let's move over and talk about the economy. Now, Kiplinger, somewhat known as a little bit of a, can be a little bit of a Pollyanna about things.
You're a little shocked.
One of the things I like about Kiplinger is they're optimistic. They're almost as pathologically optimistic as I am.
And
I
like boy, that. Are we optimistic this time.
I like that in a girl or in a boy. And so you say, though, that the economy rebound is the real thing.
And the reason we point this out is because over the last year or two, we've kind of been whipsawed because we think the economy's starting to come back and then it drops back down again. But this time we're saying that it's really happening this time. We don't believe it's going to fizzle as it did last year. Because we're seeing the beginnings of business spending starting up again, and that's what you and I have been talking about is what's needed to really fuel this recovery. The poor old consumer's been doing a heck of a job, but they can't do it by themselves forever.
Well, and what I like about the current economic structure, Joan, is that it's built on all the things we learned in the 80s and the 90s. It's built on the rubble of the late 90s and those that have been that were strong enough to survive the irrational exuberance and the subsequent collapse of a lot of things in the marketplace. All this the terrorism that we've had, the war on terrorism, 9/11, the corporate scandals, those companies, small and large, that are still around have learned so much. We've had a trial by fire. And that's the reason why I believe that this next expansion is going to be healthier and more sustainable and stronger than the last one we had.
Yeah, well, the businesses that have survived should be pretty darn strong.
Exactly.
At this point.
Well, and I'll tell you something else, Joan. There are a lot of 40-somethings folks out there running businesses that have never been through the kinds of times
that
we've gone through. Those of us who are a little longer in the tooth, we've been through some tough times. Before the 70s and the 80s, we had a lot of tough times there. But not to compare any of this to the Great Depression, but still, this has been a good metal-hardening experience for some of the young folks, the young managers out there. And I think they've learned a lot, and I think that's going to bode well for us in the future. What do you think?
Oh, I agree. Absolutely.
4% next year?
Sure, what the heck? Why not? Sky's the limit.
Kiplinger says the GDP will grow, or will rise, growth will rise to 4% in 2004.
Now, this year we're only expecting 2.5% for the year.
But, Joan, let's put that in perspective. This 2.5 because of the lackluster early part of the year.
Right, I'll take it.
Of the year. And what was it? Second quarter was like 3.1 or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly.
Looking really good. So we may not like the number, but we like the trend.
Absolutely.
20 till. Stay with us. A lot more to come right after these messages. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, Elise Benin will be with us. She's going to talk to us about how to maximize our websites. Kirk Chapis is going to join us, and he's going to help us put our best foot forward in the marketplace. Bill Huss will join us after that. We're going to talk about California politics. He's a former Superior Court judge out there, one of Lance Ito's contemporaries. Almost got the O.J. trial. He's going to... I think he kind of wishes he had, too, because he would might have been a little different outcome. He might have had control of the courtroom. Anyway, he's going to be back. We're just going to talk about California politics, though, when he joins us. And then after that, Jonathan Zook's going to be with us, and we're going to talk about technology and the Association for Competitive Technologies fly-in, which I will be broadcasting from on Wednesday, the 17th of this month. Joan Pride is our guest. That was her little voice who piped up there in the middle of my monologue. It's okay, Joan. I don't mind. Joan, let's move on down and talk about Internet taxation. This is the bane of the revenue existence of states, isn't it?
Boy, well, it has been up till now. That's true. But there's been a moratorium on the imposition of taxes on Internet access by state and local governments.
Mm-hmm.
And that moratorium ends November 1st, so the question is going to be, what will Congress do? We had thought that they would just temporarily extend the ban, but now we think they're going to make the ban permanent.
Now, see, that is a sea change. That's a major decision, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
If they make it permanent, now, of course, permanent might be with a little P, not a capital P.
Oh, yeah.
But still, the much to the chagrin of the governors, because the issue here, folks, is all of the commerce that's being done online right now, most of it is not being subject to sales tax, to state sales tax, state and local
sales tax.
That's
right. That's right.
Some of it is because of the concept of a nexus. When you buy something from a company that has a warehouse or an office or any kind of an installation in that state where you live, then that company is supposed to charge you sales tax.
Right. Now, you're talking about the sales tax issue, which is a related issue.
Mm-hmm.
This is access.
This is not sales tax. This is
right.
access
And what the states had been saying is, we are not going to agree to continuing the ban on access taxes unless you let us force Internet retailers to collect out-of-state sales taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was this sort of deadlock. Well, now the states have kind of broken the deadlock by saying, fine, have your ban. We don't care. We would
on
rather...
access. Have your ban on access.
We are going to show, because the federal government has been saying all along, we're not going to let you force Internet retailers to collect sales taxes because you guys all do such a crazy job of imposing these taxes.
6,700 different locations.
You're all different. So what the states have said, fine, we'll take your challenge. They've been getting together, trying to come up with a uniform system. Now, I think this is a tough job, but they say they're going to do it, and they're really working on it. If they can come up with a uniform system, then they want to go back to Congress and say, hey, we've answered your concern. Now let us force these taxes to be collected.
Mm-hmm. So they're basically throwing away access tax.
Right.
Because that's not really as big a deal as the sales tax.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And that
because it's not like it's lost revenue. They never had the ability to impose the access taxes in the beginning.
Exactly. All right, well, that'll be interesting to see how that rolls out, especially if they do a permanent ban on the Internet access tax.
Right.
Let's move over and talk politics. Now, General Wesley Clark, the talking head general of the war on what was it? Was he on CNN mostly?
Yes. I believe, or was it CBS?
I forgot. No, it wouldn't have been CBS, but the thing is, it was CNN or MSNBC. Anyway,
okay.
He's the guy who, for some reason, people have decided that he ought to become president. I mean, I don't know what they think, why they think he has the credentials. Not that anybody apparently has to have that much credentials to be president, but for some reason they've decided that he should be king, and it's added a little controversy to the Democrat side, hasn't it?
Well, you know what this is. This is about a Democratic field that's very lackluster, and a Democratic hierarchy that's terrified to have Howard Dean become the nominee. So
wow.
They're casting about for anything, any possible alternative to Dean.
Think about these nine people running for president on the Democrat side, Joan, and they're all trying to get their message out. They're spending money. They're raising money. They're spending an incredible amount of time and energy. And then here's this other little scenario going on over here. Not only Clark, but also Hillary.
Yeah,
Senator Hillary?
I really have trouble seeing how she runs. I really do.
Well,
but they always talk about her.
Think about this, Joan. What if Clark, it looks like Clark might be drafted.
Mm-hmm.
Then if he wins somehow in 2004, then that puts her chances off until 2012.
If he wants a second term.
Right. But the thing is if he doesn't win, but he runs, that makes him the presumptive candidate in 2008, which means that she's got to run against him in the primaries.
Well, I don't know, though. I don't know if he's committed to running again. You know, look at Al Gore. He didn't. He was the presumptive nominee, and then
right.
He didn't run.
Right. That's true. But Al Gore has other problems.
So.
Okay, let's move on. This is just an interesting little thing going on there with the politics, folks. Joan, quickly, let's move on down and talk about junk email. Congress will soon help stop the barrage of junk email.
That's right. Stiff penalties for
spam.
Businesses that keep sending email pitches after they've opted out.
Or when they are, and I think they ought to do it for people who have sent it when you didn't opt in.
I agree.
And opting in means, folks, that you gave them permission. You said, here's
prior
my
permission.
Email,
right.
Like when people subscribe to my newsletter. That's what it means.
Exactly.
Or when they ask Kiplinger to send them their stuff. But what we got to do is make sure that when you hurt the spammers, that you don't hurt the legitimate businesses who've been given permission to market on the Internet. That's the challenge they've got, Joan. Tintail, stay with us. We'll be right back with our good friend, Joan Pride. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for hanging around with us today. Joan Pride is our guest, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and I encourage you to check out their website, folks, at kiplinger.com. A lot of stuff. Even if you're not a subscriber, you can go there and noodle around and find some important information that they'll make available to you just because you're such a nice guy or such a nice lady. Joan Pride, who's also a nice lady, is a senior editor there at Kiplinger. And Joan, China is so huge. That economy is emerging so fast that all the stuff that happened with SARS earlier in the year, which really took a toll. It did cost them some money. But in terms of the whole, it really didn't create any kind of a problem, did it?
No, it really didn't. We thought it would, but they've gotten over that pretty well.
Well, I think that's a testament to the strength of that emerging economy, isn't it?
Right. And they also, after botching the whole SARS thing initially, finally, you know, stood up and took care of it.
Don't you think, Joan, that this SARS thing, you know, there's everything, as horrible as things can be, they're often, almost always, basically, are blessings that can come out of those things.
Oh, I agree.
And don't you think
this is a good example?
Yeah, that SARS created left a little bit of openness, created a little bit of openness in the way they manage their country now that they didn't have before.
Well, I think it people were reading them in the Riot Act over this. Their own people were upset mm-hmm. that they hadn't been more forthcoming about it.
And when their own people can have that kind of influence over the leaders, and in a country that's becoming more and more capitalistic, Joan, that's just one more little chink in the armor of capitalism, isn't
that's
it?
That's right.
So, if, as I said, folks, if you got to look for a blessing in the SARS situation, maybe that's it. Tell us about the GDP over there in China.
Well, we're saying, you know, keep your socks on here, but we're saying growth will hit 7.5% this year and nearly 8% in 2004. So,
Joan, if we did 7.5% over here, we'd run into the ocean. We'd just run right off the continent.
We'd just explode.
Yeah. I think Alan Greenspan would have a heart attack.
I think so.
7.5. They couldn't raise interest rates fast enough.
I was just going to say, we'd see rates going up to about 10%.
They couldn't raise them fast enough.
Yeah.
But think about that, folks. I mean, that's when you hear me say in my anecdotal way that China is an economic tsunami that's going to wash over the earth, over the markets around the world over the next 20 years, those are the numbers that back up what I'm saying, aren't they?
Right. But we really do have currency problems with them. Their currency remains weak, and because it's tied to the dollar, and the dollar is weak.
Mm-hmm.
And we are trying to get them to do things to strengthen it, and so far, according to today's papers, they are resisting very strongly.
But, Joan, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And so it's bad for our manufacturers and others around the world, but it's good for consumers, isn't it?
It's good for consumers, and it's good for some companies that do a lot of their stuff is, I guess, produced or partially produced in China. So it's sort of a mixed blessing for companies like that.
Right. Yeah. This currency thing, and Joan, you've become our expert in currency.
Oh no.
Right? this currency thing is such an interesting thing to observe. It is to me. It's fascinating to me, and I'm learning more and more about it. I'm a long way from being an expert, but I'm learning a little bit more. At least I can sort of stay in the conversation these days with people who talk about currency, because it's very simple. If the dollar, if the currency is strong, that means their exports are not valuable, are not as desirable. If the currency is weak, that means that country's exports are very desirable, but it's good or bad for the other countries that they trade with, depending on whether you're a consumer or an exporter.
That's right. Pretty good. That was pretty good.
How about that?
Yeah.
I pay attention. Hey, Joan, let's move down and talk about Saudi Arabia.
Well, things are coming to a head one of these days in Saudi Arabia, because the older leaders are going to be dying off, and there's going to be a lot of cousins and princes and folks like that sort of struggling for the heart of the government. You have pro-Western people and anti-Western people that are going to be fighting this out.
I worry about Saudi Arabia more than I worry about Iraq, Joan.
I think we got to worry about them the most of all.
It's because the Iraqis are literate. Saudi Arabia has a lot, apparently, according to what I've read, Joan, they've got a lot of illiterate people in Saudi
Plus,
Arabia.
Plus, you have this royal family. It's a huge royal family.
Hundreds and hundreds of princes.
It's,
I mean, thousands
of princes. It's incredible, yes. That have done nothing but be princes for their lives.
Yeah, Saudi Arabia, folks, is the next nation to be concerned about, maybe more than Iraq and Iran.
Right, because of their wealth and their oil.
Yep. Thanks, Joan. Good job
today.
Thank
you, Jim.
We'll see you next time.
Okay.
Actually, not in two weeks, right?
Right.
Week and a half, actually, Monday the 15th. Have a good week off.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and each and every member of our military sending a post around the world on our behalf. God bless you. God be with you. We are very proud of you. This is Jim Blassingame, Small Business Advocate. See you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.